Shabbos, and how they're going to coexist with Avelis Yeshana. And so we saw the Bach very sharply drawing a distinction yesterday between, let's say, a Shabbos that occurred earlier, as Rosh Chodesh Av, right in that context, or Beis Av, as the case may be, and Shabbos Chazon, you know, Dai L'Shabbos Achas, where you're not going to do the proper Kavod Shabbos. So I wanted to talk about Shabbos Chazon proper, as we had entered into that foray a little bit yesterday. So the discussion is really a discussion in Ashkenaz, and it's a discussion of the Ramah. So let's take a look here. The Ramah writes the following. Again, the Mechaber Mishenechasav Matan Besimcho Bar Yisrael De Islay Dina Bahadeakum Lishtamin Mine Dereya Mazale. Again, the inverse of Adar. We've noted many times the parallels between Tisha B'Av and Purim. So it's really a parallel between Av and Adar. Mishnechasav Mematan Besimcha Mishnechasad Or Marbe Besimcha. Okay, so the Ramah says Mila Shehime Rosh Chodesh Atishvav Nogin Shamol Bal Bris Avi Aben Lov Shin Bigdei Shabbos. Right, that would not be suspended in light of the Mematan Besimcha Vablav Hachi Aser Afilu B'Shabbos Shel Chazon In Machlif In Lobosh Bigdei Shabbos Ki Maksonis Bilvad. What we would basically call like an undershirt type garment. So that's the Mordechai. You see the Hagos Ashri. See the Rokeach, the Aguda. So in other words, strictly Ashkenaz. Aval, a person Parucha Shel Shabbos. Imlo Shira Tisha B'Av B'Shabbos, as has happened in two consecutive years. V'nidcha Sh'azin person Parucha Shel Shabbos. Mishesh Lonisun B'Shabbos Nachamu Mutter Lobosh Pigde Shabbos B'Shabbos Shel Chazon. So, in a pretty narrow exemption from this practice. So we have, you know, if the discussion yesterday was about Kavod Shabbos, but not, you know, anything that would have implicated Shabbos itself. So here we have the discussion about Shabbos Shel Chazon, you know, in the Ramah. So the Magen Avraham seems to accept the Ramah's analysis because he's operating strictly at the margin. He says, "Motar afilu chal Tisha B'Av b'Shabbos." This is the undershirt Ramachmir. Right, again, it's like an undershirt type garment, so he thinks that a person is going to be machmir on something like an undershirt is just taking things way too far, and unjustifiably, because, you know, there's no real basis for having to be in more of an active state of discomfort. You're wearing it mipnei hazeya, so that sort of aligns yesterday with what we talked about, v'chitza mishum nikios. There's no reason for a person to be an active state of tzar. But if the Magen Avraham accepted the fundamental analysis of the Ramah, that we could compromise on, you know, a Kavod Shabbos proper, and not just Kavod Shabbos in the preparatory sense. There are two aspects of Kavod Shabbos. One of them is preparation for Shabbos. One of them is, you know, on Shabbos itself. So the Gra repudiated this practice. So the Gra says, "Oh, Chum Rabbi Alma." So, afim hum aya aser bekibos mirosh chodesh ha'itir l'chabes mishum kavod Shabbos, right? That is clear, right? They allow certain forms of kvisa bechamishi for the sake of Shabbos. V'lechad mandam arafilu b'tisha b'av atzmo v'lo yechamer mitisha b'av shechal b'Shabbos shav achila dechamir, right? That's actual gestation of food. You know, and you're wondering the actual calendar date of the month is the 9th of Av. So Amru Maila al Shulchanu Afilu Kisudas, and what the chule there is Shlomo, the Suda of Shlomo, and it was the height of the Jewish Commonwealth. So there are no restrictions whatsoever on Shabbos, etc. So the Gra says it can't really be that this practice that the Ramah is advocating is a bridge too far. Because we know when Akdume Puranus Alom Bekadminan, so Erdocha the fast till after Tisha B'Av, when it's Shechalios B'Shabbos, which itself is a very important statement about, you know, always pushing off Puranos and see peace of the Yeshua, and hopefully it won't come to it. That's a fundamental orientation. He says, but look, you know, if it is the 9th of Av and it's Shabbos, you know, you have a full three meals and a person doesn't have to reduce. And, you know, even fundamentally when it comes to Shalosh Shudas and you're getting to the end of the day, it's still Shabbos, Afilu Kisuda Shlomo. So how are you going to tell me to wear things that are very clearly a reflection of a broader state of avelos, can't possibly be, and he rejects it outright. So again, based on the evidence from the world of achila and based on the evidence from the world of kvisa, he's simply not moved by the Rama's recorded practice for Shabbos Chazon. And the Mishnah Berura notes that this indeed, you know, carried the day as far as Vilna was concerned. The Vikila Kadosha Vilna, Noagin al Piagra, Lobosh Big Day Shabbos. And it says, Vayesh Mishan and Begechad, so kind of like a third way, right, to do at least some heker that it's Shabbos Chazon. V'chein Kasser, Biakov Emden, B'shem Aviv, Yenis, and who's his father? It was Rabbi Yaakov Emden's father. Exactly. Hagon Shasarich Lobo Shpig Day Shabbos, Avila B'Shabbos, Shechal B'Tishabab. So there's nothing to talk about here, the, you know, from these perspectives, the Chacham Tzvi and the Gon, that Shabbos is Shabbos, and Akdume Poranus Alumikad Minan, the Poranus has moved off, and, you know, to do anything like this would be a problem of Avelos, on Shabbos, which is, a problem in terms of Avelos Befar Hesed. Again, if you want to go back to the Gon's internal rationale, that how could it possibly be, remember about Shachiyanu Ilan, he said there, how could it possibly be more chamor than, we talked about the practice of Shachiyanu during the 3 weeks. So the Gon, again, repudiated that and said, can't be that there's really an issue with Shachiyanu Bein HaMitzarim, because Akiva, what was his rationale? How could it possibly be more chamor than Avelos Yom HaMisa Atzmo? The Gemara in Brachos says, right, Meis Aviv, right? So you'd say the Dayan HaMes and either Tovi HaMeitiv or the Shachiyanu. So really, the Gon in concept seems to have the upper hand. And the question that we should ask ourselves is, you know, where is the Rama coming from? It's not just the Rama, but the Rama was based on a bevy of earlier sources, and the Magen Avram seemed to approve. He just said, you know, you don't have to take it too far, you know, with your undershirt or something like that, but a person would in principle refrain from Big Day Shabbos. How is that not Avelos Bifar Hesia? So one could try to argue that point, but I don't think successfully so. And I think that's where the Gon and the Chacham Tzvi, with a great degree of traction in the Achronim, will draw the line. So how is it possible to justify Avelos Befarhesia, right, in terms of these Nihugim for Shabbos Chazon? You know, the Rama would have never tolerated this in terms of Avelos Chadasha, right? Puk Chazim Ayamadava, right? That's all of you know, right, when the Avil walks into Shul on Friday night after Kabbalah Shabbos, right, he's not wearing his torn clothes. Can't be. So what's the Svara? Akiva, what's the Svara? Where's the Rama coming from? You don't have to accept the Rama as correct, but what was he thinking? Right, so the Aruch HaShulchan I use as a good foil, and we'll get to the Aruch HaShulchan in, you know, let's read the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan, as I alluded to a second ago, it's kind of nibbling around the edges here. It says, oh, you know what, this was the issue, this is why I went back and forth, and this is why he's alluding to the Gon, why the Gon would have objected. Okay, so Akiva, why don't you read the Aruch HaShulchan for us, and then I'll try to make an argument that I don't really think that that's what's at issue here. Okay, so go ahead, Akiva. So obviously, right, he's referring to
the girl.
Yeah. Right, so it's, you know, and then they're living in the same basic world. The Aruch HaShulchan happened to be the Rav Nevardak, but he was basically one of Chachmei Lita, his son, Baruch HaLevi Epstein, learned in Valashin. So, you know, that's what we're talking about. It's that part of Europe.
ולכן, אפילו בשבת שחל בו תשע בו ונדחה, אנו לובשים בגדי שבת מטעם זה. ולכן בימינו אלה, כמעט נשכח הדבר שאין לובש בגדי שבת בשבת חזון. ותמוה אצלי דבר זה, דעתו קדמוננו לא ידעו זה, ואם כל זה נהגו בזה, אף שאינו כן מדינה ואיך מבטל מן הגם.
Right, so the Aruch HaShulchan is fundamentally bothered. He says, look, we understand exactly where the Gaon was coming from, Udi Ime, right, the Chacham Tzvi and others, but what was the Ramah thinking? Right, and you've heard from me many times that the heart of the approach that, you know, I try to impart to you guys, which the Reb Chaim used to summarize with his Yiddish expression, you know, a Rishon can learn in, is that every Rishon knows how to learn. The Rambam knows how to learn, and the Ravid knows how to learn, and the Rebbe Natan knows how to learn. So the goal isn't to try to figure out who's right or wrong, right? The goal is to try to figure out, you know, what their svaros were, right? So the Aruch HaShulchan is impossible. The Ramah didn't consider and contemplate Avelis Pifarhesia. So, you know, and clearly he was comfortable with it. And again, he is recording a practice, which is an ancient practice of Ashkenaz, you know, Kadmonenu. So we all know that the Gaon, you know, was a purist. The Gaon's jurisprudence was the jurisprudence of a total purist. So, you know, the Gaon never, ever felt that he had to yield to a minhag that he thought was conceptually or textually indefensible. We've seen that how many times now, just in Hilchos Bein HaMitzrayim? Whether it was Shachianu or anything else. The Gaon says he's going to rule in accordance with how he understands the Gemara. That's why people think the Gaon, you know, is kind of like a Rishon in that way. It's a correct legal analysis of his approach. Just to, you know, speak to you guys a little bit about this for a second, because I want to use it as this sugya is a very good way of getting at methodology in terms of acharonim. So what the Aruch HaShulchan and the Gaon are basically debating is the value of a certain kind of a precedent, right? A certain minhag. How much value do you put on that? So you'll, for those of you, and I'm sure some of you will go into the law. So one of the main questions in legal analysis, and this is very, 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 very relevant to being better able to understand how halachic processes also work, is the question, it's in the news a lot always in June because that's when the Supreme Court comes out with their decisions, is the question of the relevance of precedents, even if you think that they're fundamentally wrong. So that is a legal doctrine called stare decisis, is a Latin phrase, okay? So, so if there are, for example, current justices on the Supreme Court, so lahavdil, but it's a very important model for you guys to be aware of, who think that stare decisis is fundamentally wrong. So if something is not true, repeating it doesn't make it more true. Right? So let's say you assume, and just for example, this is the most common example, that Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided, that the Constitution actually doesn't have a right to privacy, and even if it did exist, it wouldn't extend to the unborn. A reasonable argument that you do not believe that there are certain implicit, you know, rights that are recognized in the Constitution. Anyway, by the way, anyone by the way, happen to know what those rights are referred to in legal circles? Good things for you to know. It'll enhance your Torah learning if you understand this. Yeah, Kiva, what do they call those?
Inalienable rights?
No, penumbras, okay? Penumbras. So those are referred to as penumbras. So there's a debate as to whether penumbras really exist. So for example, the current Chief Justice, who's somebody who's thinking I very strongly identify with, he's an incrementalist. So he does not, it would seem, based on everything that he's written, believe in penumbras, believe in rights that have not been stated in the Constitution, sort of like hidden rights. And he probably believes that Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. So the question is, when you believe something is wrongly decided, but it has been challenged and upheld on multiple occasions, so Roe was most prominently challenged, it's a 1973 case, it was most prominently challenged in 1992, a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey's, or just typically referred to as Casey. And so it has been upheld, and it's basically been the law of the land for 50 years, subject to multiple reviews. So if you're Clarence Thomas, who's a very respected jurist. So he does not believe in a principle called stare decisis. He does not believe that there's value in precedent if, again, the precedent is upholding something which is not truthful. So he would say, if your first grade math teacher taught you 2 + 3 = 4, and then your third grade teacher said 2 + 3 = 4, and then again in fifth grade they said 2 + 3 = 4, well, it was 5 when you were in first grade, and it was 5 when you were in third grade, and it was 5 when you were in fifth grade, and 2 + 3 = 5, and truth is truth. And law, right, should be getting at truth. Does the Constitution protect or does it not protect the right to abort an unborn fetus? That's all. That's really just the question. It doesn't matter how many times people can repeat a wrong idea. Okay. So what do people like John Roberts who believe in stare decisis, so how do they approach that issue? They will say that law is, yes, in part about distilling truth, but law is also about ordering society. Okay? So that law is actually a combination of different things. We might use the terminology of MS, of truth, but also shalom. Shalom not in the sense of ben ish l'rehu, but shalom in terms of the smooth operations of society. So John Roberts is somebody who happens to come from that perspective. And what makes it really interesting in the Lamdas, and there's an enormous amount of Lamdas in this, and that's why Lamdanim do so well in this field, is if you come from a Roberts kind of a perspective, that precedent is valuable, so then there are all kinds of chilukim about what kind of precedent. So certainly something that's been upheld 4 or 5 times is a more, is a stronger precedent than something that's never been challenged, okay? Or you might say in a turbulent time, in a time in which society is generally disordered, you might lend greater value to precedent per se, because the entire basis for using precedent is to create predictability and order in society. So let's say if John Roberts happened to think that now was a disordered time, he might think it was important for the courts to be more ordered and more precedential in their jurisprudence. So these are really important ways of thinking about legal systems. So the Gaon, Lahavdil, was a purist. The Gaon didn't believe that you had this precedent that in Ashkenaz, people were wearing big day chol on Shabbos Chazon, that somehow that was meaningful. And he said, well, look at the evidence. Look at the halachic evidence. Look at what happens if Tisha B'Av Shechalios B'Shabbos. Nobody challenges the halacha of Mala Kisuda Shlomal Shulchano. So how could it be? We should all agree, he says, that Achila is Chamur from Malbush, right? It's one of the things that you fundamentally cannot do on Tisha B'Av, maybe the fundamental thing that you cannot do. And yet that's deferred in every way until after Shabbos. So how could it be that your begadim should be reflective of Tisha B'Av and not Shabbos? The evidence simply doesn't support it. You know, moreover, right, he quotes the halacha of Kavod Shabbos in terms of Kvisa, B'Yom Chamishi, and he says, if one can make allowances for Kavod Shabbos in terms of the preparatory version of Kavod Shabbos, how can one not make allowances for Kavod Shabbos on Shabbos Gufa? So the Gaon in general did not very much subscribe to the importance of precedence. And what you see in the Aruch HaShulchan is, right, this is not about right or wrong, it's about a different approach. So the Aruch HaShulchan's predicate, before he gives you what he thinks his answer is, this is being done, and the fact that it's being done in Ashkenaz, not for Sfarad, but in Ashkenaz, where the precedent exists, is fundamentally valuable. And if it's fundamentally valuable, even if we can't be sure, we should defend it. Right? This is very reminiscent of what we learned earlier in the week in terms of Nisuin, where the Aruch HaShulchan says, look, it may very well be that the only reason that there would be an Isser of Nisuin during the 9 days is lo misam de milsa. But maybe that itself is reason for an iser. After all, right, go around, nobody's doing it. So the Aruch HaShulchan is going to try to cultivate a rationale so as to explain how this minhag is actually not a violation of Avelos Befarhesia. But again, let's appreciate the orientation, because that's really the more important issue. What's driving him to this? What's driving him to this is precedent is valuable. Minhag is valuable. I spoke to bedtime earlier this week. Al titosh Torah simecha. This is what's being done. We should value that, and we should strive to understand as best as we can what the Rama's practice, his ruling was based on, what this practice is based on. And as we'll see, as Akiva will read in a second, it will lead the Aruch HaShulchan to the conclusion that the precedent should actually be upheld. Contra the Gon and the Chacham Tzvi and the overwhelming halachic forces that he was encountering in the previous two or three generations. So with that, so Akiva, go ahead, and I'll give you a different approach than the Aruch HaShulchan, and then we'll throw it back to Edison. Okay. Wow, so it's a remarkable thing. So the Akiva, I think we can agree that the Aruch HaShulchan is a pretty elaborate theory that he develops, right, Lefi Aniyas Daito, about what was going on here for Big Day Shabbos versus Big Day Chol. And he says, look, in the times of the Rama and the earlier authorities, the distinction was not particularly perceptible. It had to do really with Yoker versus Zol, and therefore none of this practice ever implicated Avelos Befarhesia, because it wasn't a Davar Hanikar. They're pretty, it's a pretty surprising doctrine that the Aruch HaShulchan is trying to advance, that somehow people were wearing Big Day Chol, but nobody could tell. Everybody kind of knew it, but nobody could tell, because it wasn't what he refers to as the Tmunas HaBegadim, as opposed to, in more recent generations, when Big Day Chol versus Big Day Shabbos were qualitatively different in terms of their appearance, and therefore Avelos Befarhesia was implicated, and that's why the Gon struck out as he did against it. But, in more recent times, the fact pattern is more similar to the fact pattern that existed Bimei HaRama and the earlier authorities of Ashkenaz, and therefore it's almost as if he's saying, surely the Gon shouldn't object, and the others who come from this perspective, and the earlier authorities, the Rama, those the Rama based his ruling off of, should carry the day, and our holding should be in accordance with their holding, Dehainu Big Day Chol, which are just happen to be of cheaper quality, but it's not a Davar Hanikar, would not implicate Avelos Befarhesia on Shabbos. So again, it's a very elaborate theory. The Aruch HaShulchan doesn't instantiate it with anything other than, the sort of historical sociological evidence of clothing of Jewish communities in Eastern Europe. But what's most important to note is what's motivating him is the very strong desire to justify the Minag HaKadmonim. It's a desire that the Gon patently did not share. Different halachic jurisprudence, different ways of thinking about the halachic system and the role of minhag and an earlier minhag. And so the Aruch HaShulchan chooses to wage the battle very much along the lines of Avelos Bevarhesia, and that he sees as the operative halachic issue at stake. So I would say the following. I think that this is a case study in terms of halachic thinking, but I think that the issue might actually be one which is more readily soluble through a certain chakira that I would draw. So what I would suggest is that maybe the Aruch HaShulchan could have had a more straightforward solution to the dilemma. Maybe what the Ramah was really saying is that when it comes to Avelos Yishana, there will be a greater tolerance for Avelos Befarhesia than there will be for Avelos Chadash. An idea we've introduced in the past. It's, if you understand that Avelos Befarhesia on Shabbos is sort of a zilzal Shabbos, it's an attack on Shabbos, so it's hard to draw the distinction between Avelos Chadash and Avelos Yishana. But if one takes a different perspective, that the issue in terms of Avelos Befarhesia on Shabbos is not an issue qua kavod slash zilzal Shabbos, but it's an issue with respect to the mitzvah of the Yachid imposing on the framework of the mitzvah of the Rabbim, sort of ala the Gemara and Moed Katan Tav Tes about Avelos on Yantif, right? The Yachid should give way to the Rabbim. So your personal Avelos, right, can completely coexist with Shabbos in your own personal space. But once you enter the space of the Rabbim, that's an issue because you're affecting the character of the day in a way that's, you know, inappropriate based on the Yachid versus Rabbim dynamic. But let's say it's Avelos Yeshana, it's Avelos de Rabbim. So if you're willing to say that it's not intrinsically a Zilzul Shabbos, not intrinsically a Zilzul Shabbos, but it's more an issue of imposition, then you might argue in favor of upholding this minhag, but not along, again, the grounds that it was not really Avelos Befarhesia, but that within certain boundaries, we'll make allowances for Avelos Befarhesia when it comes to Avelos Yeshana. I would find that to be a more compelling conceptual explanation for the base for the Ramah's minhag. And then the Gaon will say what the Gaon will say, which is, I don't believe in these distinctions between Avelos Yeshana and Avelos Chadash. He's already rejected it in another area of halacha with respect to Shachianu. So, you know, in a way that's internally consistent, he'll reject it here as well. I prefer to say that is gufa, the machlokes between the Rama and the Gaon, is to what extent Avelos Yeshana and Avelos Chadasha, right, are actually fundamentally different categories. The Gaon does not appear to address them that way. I think that the Rama did think that they were fundamentally different categories, and hence you have these different practices. It would appear to me, this is only